It is ironic that religious liberty would ever be at risk in America. The nation was settled and founded primarily by Christians of different denominations, but when they created the federal government and the Constitution, one concern was that there would be guarantees of religious freedom in our governing document. So the first right in the First Amendment ensured religious liberty. But too often the courts and the legal establishment have turned the First Amendment, especially the Establishment Clause, on its head. What did the founders intend versus what do we have today? Mike Ferris is a constitutional attorney. He is with the Alliance Defending Freedom, which, by the way, is an organization co-founded by the founder, the ultimate founder of this particular radio station, the late Dr. D. James Kennedy. He joined forces with Bill Bright, James Dobson, Marlon Maddox, and others to found the Alliance Defending Freedom. So we welcome Mike Ferris. Mike, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
It is my privilege to be on your program and to stand in the legacy of Dr. Kennedy.
Okay, good. I appreciate it. Okay, so why don't you first explain what the founders meant by these words? This is the opening of the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. What do those words mean?
Well, there are two different clauses in there. They're interrelated, to be sure, but they do have distinct ideas. The No Establishment Clause is the provision that basically prevents the erection of a government religious orthodoxy to which you can be charged with heresy. And so we didn't want a state church. At the federal level, eventually all the states adopted similar constitutional provisions in their state constitutions. So we didn't want a government church, either at the federal or state levels, within a few years of the adoption of the Constitution. And so anything that flows from that, basically, it's an official orthodoxy plus coercion. So if the government tries to coerce anyone to perform a religious ceremony or to pray or to read the Bible or to read the Quran or to do anything of that nature, anything that is a forced opinion, forced belief, violates the Establishment Clause. Now, today, there is a new orthodoxy, and I believe that it violates the Establishment Clause just as much as anything that was ever done in William and Mary, England earlier than William and Mary, under Henry VIII or Bloody Mary or any of them. What's going on today is coerced belief in the area of LGBT issues, coerced use of gender pronouns, coerced belief systems that are being posed on kids in schools. And so we have the coercion of beliefs in critical theory in a variety of ways. And so anytime the government establishes a belief system that it says is the right one and requires people to adhere to it in any way, shape, or form, that's an establishment of religion. The second phrase is the deny the free exercise thereof. It goes beyond belief. Beliefs are absolutely protected. The government can never punish you for what you believe, but the right to practice your religion should be a highly protected right, but not absolute, because people will do crazy things in the name of religion. Pagans who commit child sacrifice, that should not be protected. And so, we can find other extreme examples, but the burden is on the government. Anybody that wants to act in their religious belief, something that's very important to me, when my wife and I decided to homeschool our children in 1982, it was against the law to homeschool for us in the state of Washington. And we homeschooled anyway because we believe that God required us to do that. So if the government tells you to do something that God prohibits you from doing, or tells you you can't do something that God requires you to do, that either of those options is a violation of the principle of your free exercise rights are protected.
Okay, now going back to the Establishment Clause itself, we know that a lot of the founding fathers, in fact, virtually all of them, in some ways, they would acknowledge God in their public speeches. They were sworn in on the Bible. They said, "So help me God." There were, you know, Christian worship services and so forth. They hired chaplains, and so forth. And none of those acts that are, or, you know, references to God in any way were viewed as a violating the separation of church and state or violating the Establishment Clause. And of course, the separation of church and state as a phrase, is not even in the Constitution. So go ahead and wax eloquent there about the early, you know, in the early days of the nation as a nation.
Well, Thomas Jefferson is probably most clearly the most secular of the founders. I wouldn't say he's entirely secular. On a scale, he would be among the most secular early founders. Yeah, when he was president, he allowed church services to be held in various government buildings, including the Capitol. He sent the Marine Corps band to go play at these church services held in the Capitol. And so what's missing from any of those scenarios where religion is accommodated is coercion. There's no coercive nature of holding a church service in the Capitol, having the Marine Corps band play or anything, you know, similar today, allowing churches to rent public school buildings is often it's claimed that that violates the second state. Well, no, it doesn't. And again, as you point out, that phrase is a somewhat misleading slogan that tries to get the idea of the Establishment Clause. But the key element is there government coercion involved? And if there's no coercion, there's no violation.
So the key word really is coercion, which is interesting because this gets back to your point that today we are finding a situation where people are being coerced to embrace something that violates their own conscience. For example, if they don't believe in the LGBTQ, you know, agenda or whatever, but in some contexts, they have to affirm it. Otherwise, you know, they're basically, their lives could be ruined or, you know, lose their jobs, et cetera, lose their freedom.
Exactly. I mean, the reason for that is that the philosophical basis for us, for Christians embracing religious freedom is that we believed that God alone has jurisdiction over the heart, soul, and minds of men, and that that does not belong to the government. That's outside the legitimate basis of government. That's the difference between toleration and liberty. I would hope that no Christian ever views tolerance as the goal, because tolerance is a cheap imitation of two much higher and better things. On a personal level, if you say you tolerate somebody, it means, I don't really like you, but I'm going to put up with you. Whereas we're told as Christians to love people, not just people that we like or people that are similar to us, but we're told to love even those that hate us and despitefully use us. So love is a whole lot higher than mere toleration. And on the legal side, the Toleration Acts of William and Mary in 1688, they allowed you to differ from the Church of England, but only on five particular issues and only in pre-authorized ways on those five issues, like a toggle switch. You had choice A and B on these five issues. And if you differed just a little bit from the Church of England, then they would tolerate you. If you differed a lot, they wouldn't. But we rejected that and said, no, we're going to go higher than that, much higher, because we say the government has no jurisdiction over the heart, soul, and mind of man. And we believe that because of what the Bible says when it says to render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's and unto God the things that are God's. Well, the heart, soul, and mind of man belongs to government. No, excuse me, I misspoke. Does not belong to government. It belongs to God and God alone.
Okay, if the absolutists among the strict separation of church and state folk, if they had their way, what would that really mean for religious liberty in America? And this is perhaps where this phrase, you know, well, the Constitution gives us the right to worship, well, free worship. Well, wait a minute, isn't it more than that?
Yeah, that they're trying to confine it to the equivalent of church services on Sunday morning. That's it. You know, do whatever you want on Sunday morning, but don't take it outside of there. And that's not what the wording of it is. Far beyond that. It's the free exercise of religion. It's the right to put your religion into day-to-day practice. The free exercise clause applies 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, in every setting of your life. The government can never, in any circumstance, interfere with your free exercise of religion absent one of these overriding examples of like child sacrifice or something like that, where you're, you know, the way to say it from a Christian perspective, you can't use the moral law of God relative to freedom to violate the moral law of God concerning treatment of other people. So rape, adultery, burglary, murder, none of those kinds of things, all those which violate the moral law of God, can never be justified on the basis of some religious freedom claim. So you can't do that kind of, you know, what the common law called a crime that's malum in se. It means it's intrinsically evil in and of itself. And so you can't commit those kinds of crimes in the name of religious freedom and get away with it.
Now, in your work with the Alliance Defending Freedom, and before you were with ADF, you were with some other legal groups and so forth fighting for our religious freedom. Thank God for all that. Thank God for what you do, and thank God for the ADF. But you guys are kind of swimming upstream, right, as far as, you know, the whole legal establishment in general?
Well, in some respects we are. You know, of course, the federal courts are much better today than they have been for a long, long time, thanks to the combination of President Trump and his advisors. He didn't know all the judges, but he listened to good people and appointed a number of really good judges. And then the Senate confirmed them. And so, you know, it's that combination. We're in much better shape than we've ever been, well, for a long time. However, there's still one really bad decision out there on religious freedom that's got to be taken care of, and that's called the Smith versus Employment Division case. People are probably familiar with the federal law, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, that was passed in 1994, and it was a law that that was made necessary by this bad Supreme Court decision, the Smith case, that said religious freedom, the free exercise rights, don't apply if it's a neutral law of general applicability. So, for example, if a law says you can't discriminate against somebody on the basis of gender in hiring, a church that wants to hire only men pastors could be sued, and there would be no religious freedom protection, you know, under the strict terms of that decision. Now, there's other things that churches could do, but strictly speaking, the Smith decision takes that in the wrong direction. And so I helped write the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. I was the co-chairman of the drafting committee for it. And when Hobby Lobby won their case in the Supreme Court, not being forced to pay for abortions in their insurance program for their employees, they won their case based on the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, not on the First Amendment. They should have won on the First Amendment. This awful Smith case put a barrier to that, and so they won on the statute instead. We've got to fix that. We've got to turn that around. I'm hopeful that the current Supreme Court will turn that around. We're waiting for them to get their act, you know, find the right case to take. We keep bringing cases to them, and they've decided many of them correctly, but on slender grounds, rather than directly reversing that bad old decision and getting us back on our right track. But the culture is awful on these issues and getting worse by the day. So we've got a window of opportunity where we can make some ground because of Trump's judicial appointments. But the general trend in culture and in law schools and, you know, young lawyers and state legislators in many states, it's all in the wrong direction.
All right. We're basically out of time. By the way, that Smith case that you refer to, is that the peyote decision?
It is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Yep, that's exactly what it was.
And your website.
No one expected the Indians to win.
Yeah.
But they didn't expect the court to use that as an excuse to throw out longstanding religious freedom protections.
ADFlegal.org for more information. Mike Ferris, thanks so much. Keep up the great work. All the best.
God bless you. Thank you for all you're doing.